tribute to those who made the ultimate sacrifice. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. That is at Arlington National Cemetery now. In moments, President Trump will lay a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, commemorating Memorial Day and mid parades and ceremonies across America. The president is also concerned about all the casualties of war in Ukraine, telling reporters after a Truth Social post calling Russian leader Vladimir Putin absolutely crazy.
I don't know what the hell happened to Putin. I've known him a long time, always gotten along with him. But he's sending rockets into cities and killing people, and I don't like it at all.
And he's considering more sanctions on Russia, like Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky is urging the U.S. and other countries to do after days of intense Russian drone attacks. The biggest one of the war was last night. Israeli airstrikes in Gaza have killed more than 50 people. Palestinian officials say many of them were inside a school-turned-shelter. Israel says that school was a terror hideout. And Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem, who's in Israel, tells Fox.
Hamas is a dangerous enemy that calls for Israel's death and for America's death every day. They have no place in this world.
President Trump has put new tariffs on hold, delaying the 50% charge on European Union imports from June 1st to July 9th as talks continue on a trade deal. The president also continues to go after Harvard with new Truth Social posts this morning.
First thing this, I'm considering taking $3 billion of grant money away from a very anti-Semitic Harvard and giving it to trade schools all across our land.
Fox's Griff Jenkins reports in another post the president
saying we are still waiting for the foreign student list from Harvard so that we can determine, after a ridiculous expenditure of billions of dollars, how many radicalized lunatics, troublemakers all, should not be let back into our country.
Last week, the Trump administration blocked Harvard from enrolling new international students, but a federal judge put a hold on that ruling in favor of the university's challenge. America's listening to Fox News.
Are you living with dry AMD? If so, you could be on the road to geographic atrophy, or GA, a condition that leads to retinal cell death and permanent vision loss. But with Izervay, you can
slow it down, get it going slower.
Izervay slows GA progression by targeting a key source of retinal cell death, which may help preserve your vision longer. Izervay, or Avastin Captid Pegol, is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. Izervay can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. Izervay may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about Izervay today.
Izervay gets GA going slower.
Visit Izervay.com. That's Izervay.com. Paid for by Astellas.
From the News 11 Information Desk, I'm Manoel Tuiasosopo. To another successful grad night hosted by the Yuma County Anti-Drug Coalition and its helpful partners. Graduates from all the local schools were invited to the Glow Night Grad Night at the Yuma Civic Center. The fun event featured food, games, raffle prizes, and more, all provided to the young graduates for free. The special event was created to give grads a safe and drug-free environment to celebrate this huge milestone in their academic careers. And the 53rd annual Dennis Donnelly Softball Tournament was in full swing over the weekend. 36 teams from all around the country battling it out on the diamond. Teams from Chicago, California, Nevada, and Arizona were all participating in this year's tournament, clawing for bragging rights of the Dennis Donnelly Softball Tournament champions. And the world to the Junior College Softball National Championship came to an end in Yuma. Northwest Florida State made history by capturing the program's first ever NJCAA Division I Softball National Championship. Catch us on the TV side on News 11 every weekday at 5, 6, and 10 p.m. for your latest local weather and sports news.
El Dorado broadcasters and this station congratulate the newest Yuma County Chamber of Commerce members, Total Wireless, Border Financial Resources Incorporated, VS Fight Shop, and Schooley Mitchell. If you'd like to find out how you can become a member and join all the benefits membership brings, email Diana at yumachamber.org. That's Diana at yumachamber.org. Or call 928-782-2567.
A dream trip to one of the wonders of the world, brought to you by a different kind of wonder, a light bulb moment in the classroom, made possible by a quick second in the clinic. We're doing the things we enjoy with the people we love, thanks to safe and effective flu and COVID vaccines. Talk with your healthcare provider or pharmacist, get your questions answered, and schedule vaccination for your family today, because there is fun to be had and memories to be made. This message brought to you by the American Hospital Association.
Did you know that 9 out of 10 Americans are sick of the divisions in our country? But there's one small step we can take to remember that we're still connected. All over America, strangers with different political views are coming together to talk about their lives, not politics, and discovering they actually have a lot in common. Because even if we don't see eye to eye, we can still talk heart to heart. So let's talk. For a change. Learn more at takeonesmallstep.org.
100 in the forecast for your Memorial Day Monday with sunshine, 68 for tonight, 99 sunny tomorrow, 67 tomorrow night, and 98 with sunshine on Wednesday.
The following program on 560 KBLU is a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, El Dorado Broadcasters, LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, El Dorado Broadcasters, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
Well, David, you've been in Yuma a long time, have you not?
It was going to be 5 years as of yesterday, May 27th.
5 years, okay. And so I'm sitting with David Ibarra, and you're a five-year young human. And the reason you're on our show, David, I don't know if you know this. I think I told you, though. We had Jeff Stoner on not too long ago.
Yes.
And when I asked Jeff to come on, I said, do you know anybody that you would recommend to come on the show? And he said, right, without hesitation, he said, David Ibarra. Mm-hmm. And he's like, he's on the school board with me, and this guy has quite the story to tell. And I said, okay, I'll reach out to him. And lucky for me, you were very kind, and you were in Anaheim at the time when I chatted with you, right?
Yes.
And you said, yeah, I could do that. Mm-hmm. So I was blown away. I'm thankful that you came to sit down with me and chat. I want to get to know you a little bit better.
Okay.
And I think you have probably a lot to add and a lot to look up to. That's what I'm always looking for, is ways to get better in my life and teach my kids to be better. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always looking for nuggets of wisdom, and I think you've got a lot of them. Do you think you have a lot of them?
A little bit. Somewhat.
You've been around?
Been around.
You've been around the block? Yeah.
Yes, I have.
So you've worn a lot of different uniforms in your life. The police uniform, military uniform, a nursing uniform. What are the uniforms? Am I missing?
Volunteer.
Volunteer, yeah.
Volunteer.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's... What compelled you to do all those things?
Well, it started out in 79. I'm originally from a city called Stanton, next to Anaheim.
Oh, yeah,
it's
okay.
In Orange County. Went to high school there, and there's a summer program called the Regional Occupational Program, the ROP program.
Mm-hmm.
In the summertime, my mom said, hey, it'd be a good idea for you to get a job. And I was, 15 at the time. A job? Yeah, you help around the house and get a job. So my friend and I, Danny, we decided to go to the ROP office in Stanton and talk to a counselor there. And he goes, well, what are you looking for? Well, we're looking for a summer job. And he recommended a place. And at the time, again, we're aging ourselves. This is back in 79, actually May 22nd, 1979, to be exact. We applied, and he said, well, I got a job for you, gentlemen. It's going to be a nurse's aide.
Oh, okay.
Or developmental assistant working at with the developmental disabled at this place called, at the time, they called it Casa Grande Sanitarium. Mm-hmm. In West Anaheim. And they said, okay, you'll go there. You're just going to supervise some clients. They didn't call them patients. It was a 91-bed facility for the mentally disabled, from severe, profound, moderate, borderline, and mild disabilities, and but we didn't have any idea what we were getting into. It was a 6-to-2 shift, starting off part time.
Jeez, and 15 years old.
15 years old, and we got the work permit from our parents, and we went in. And the first day, I'll never forget my training nurse, Tarina. She goes, "Welcome," and it's overwhelming because when you come in to the facility, you have no idea. You have different personalities, different clients. Some of them were wearing, believe it or not, football helmets. Later, I found out is because they have grand mal seizures, so when they fall, it protects their heads.
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't know this. So, you know, we're 15 and we didn't know this.
You just thought they're
– We're not there. Yeah.
They're big
no. So,
Chargers fans.
Yeah. we didn't know. And Danny and I are going, my God. And they come and meet you and you're greeting them. And, you know, I said, okay, you know, we're getting to know them. And then she comes in and goes, okay, our first order of business is we're going to clean up this client. And the client was incontinent, and at 15, I'm like, "What? You know, I've never even changed diapers. What's going on here?"
Yeah,
just to show you how hard CNA work is. It's very, very hard. You do the total patient care, and that includes
cleaning up,
and showering, bathing, and helping them with their self-help hygiene. And it was overwhelming because I was like, "What's going on here?" You know, and he went, and she goes, "Well, this is what's going to make you or break you. If you can handle this, you know, usually we have people walk out the door the first hour of the job." So anyway, I did my job. I of course, I wasn't able to eat for about 2 weeks. But
the bottom, did you take it as a challenge?
It was a challenge because...
Are you one to be like, when you're told you can't do something, that's when you actually dig in?
Well, more like it was at first you were like, "Is this for me?" And then I thought, well, you know, I saw we had other young people working there. We had 15, 16, 17 high school kids, and mostly ladies, young ladies that worked there. And I was like, well, they need help lifting. That was another thing. You know, we had to lift the wheelchair clients and put them, you know, in their beds or when they had to go to the bathroom. So that was something that I can do that. My friend Danny, when we had our lunch break at noon, he left and never came back. Back then we didn't have cell phones, but when I finally called him, he said, "What happened?" He goes, "No way.
Nope.
No way. I can't do this. I can't do it." And he never came back. I stayed. And I stayed through my high school years. So I'd go to high school 5 days a week, and I worked the 6-to-2 shift on the weekends at Casa Grande. And then, of course, in the summer when I was able to work full time. So that was my first job.
Yeah.
And after years of being there, I was told by the charge nurse, she goes, you know, Mary Laird, who was, she rest in peace. She goes, "You know, you should think about going to community college and getting your we call it LVN. It's LVN, but it's actually LPT. In California, LPTs are licensed psychiatric technicians.
Okay.
So you're a nurse. And at that time, you'd be the charge nurse.
Yeah.
So again, we had this is where I tell young people, you know, think about your community colleges. In this case, it was Cypress College in Cypress, California. And we had people from the ROP make a presentation at our school and talked about getting your AA degree and going to community college, how affordable it was and whatnot. And they pushed the trades. So based on what my charge nurse told me and based on what was told, I said, you know, I'll enroll in the program. And it's a 2-year program. And after you do a clinical, you do all kinds of training for you're a nurse, but you specialize in psych. And in 1984, I graduated from Cypress College as a psychiatric technician. You have to take your state board, and I didn't pass it the first time. Studied harder, and the second time, I passed it. From there, my Casa Grande, now I went from nurse's aide to charge nurse, and after being there a few more years, I made it up to assistant director of nurses.
Wow.
At the time, there was job openings at Metropolitan State Hospital. It's a facility in Norwalk, California. At the time, it was about 1,100 patients from the criminally insane to schizophrenics to
what do you call that a level one facility.
It was level one. We had our own hospital police. Mm-hmm. It was a big facility. And what I was talked into getting the state is the state benefits. All this time I met my wife, Amy. I met her at Casa Grande. She was also a nurse's aide there at Casa Grande. So we met, we dated, and then she went on to the same thing. She went on to psych tech school. She got a job at Fairview State Hospital in Costa Mesa.
Oh, okay.
Working there. And I got a job at Metro State Hospital. So we continued to work there. But one of the things I noticed about our hospital police, I was like, you know, wow, they go around patrolling the grounds. They come to our units when we need help, because I worked on a lockdown unit, and sometimes they got violent, and we had to put the patients in 5-point restraints on the beds, just like what you see on TV, because they got violent. Mm-hmm. And we call the hospital police for help. And I got to talking to them, and they find out they make more money than us. And at the time at Metro State Hospital, I actually worked on we had a Spanish speaking unit.
Okay.
So all of our patients were Spanish speakers.
Wow.
So I was able
That's
to.
A big deal.
I'm fluent in Spanish, read and write. So that helped me. But what the officer told me, he says, with your bilingual skills, you make a good cop, especially with your psych background and being bilingual, you should think about getting into law enforcement. And that's where it all started there.
I see.
So I applied.
How old were you about this time?
I was 23 at the time.
Oh, wow. Still young.
Yeah.
A young buck.
And the opportunity to join the police force, take the exams, and go to the academy. And back in 85, I went to the academy in Orange County and became a reserve officer. And I still worked at State Hospital, and I would do reserve police work. Then the opportunity came to get a full-time job and working for, at the time, it was called RTD Police, the Transit Police in Los Angeles. And
I was just going to ask, so it's a division of the LAPD?
It's actually, we're owned our own department. Now it's called Metro, MTA. So you have your own, we policed all the public transportation in the city. In Los Angeles, it's the buses and now the subways.
The train.
And now you have the trains. Mm-hmm. Right now, you service over 800,000 people that use public transportation. So you have your own police department. So we specialized
on that.
And then anything surrounding, if something went on, of course, working in South Central, East LA, North Hollywood Division, Van Nuys, you worked everywhere, wherever your transportation went. So it was very unique because we focused in on public transportation. And I was assigned downtown Los Angeles on a foot beat. I actually did the old-fashioned foot beat from 3rd and Broadway to Olympic to Spring Street to Hill Street, that whole area foot beat. And when we didn't want to walk, we just get on a hop the bus, do a check on the bus, and then they take us to wherever we need to go. So it was really unique because it was originally community policing, and you got to meet your vendors. You got to meet the people. Mm-hmm. We had gangbangers that liked hanging out in certain areas, and the business people would let us know. So you got a lot of old-fashioned, back in the early 90s, you got to talk to people and became, but that was your community. So
you're saying, so the people that frequented the downtown area, you're saying people that were going to work every day in those big buildings, or the average, hot dog guy on the street all the time down in downtown LA, you're saying these were the guys that were feeding you information about the bad guys.
Yes, because it was notorious in downtown Los Angeles at the time. I was like being in a third world country. You had chain snatchers. You had pickpockets. You actually had what people don't understand. You had hustlers that would play shell games, and people would gamble. They'd set up a little cardboard, and they'd play card games or shell games, hiding something in the shell. And it's all like they do almost like what a trickster would do.
Yeah.
And these people would bet on money, and he would – manipulate so that he'd always win. Mm-hmm. And you had, you know, five or six people, and that was illegal. Illegal
gambling. Yeah, that's illegal.
That's illegal. And then you'd see the little crowds, and then when we walk up,
they grab their blanket.
They grab their blanket or whatever, and they take off.
I saw that in New York.
Yes, and they did that in
Manhattan. Not those games, but they've got purses, you know.
Yes,
Louis Vuittons.
Yes,
when police would come around, they just grab their blanket satchel and just they're out of there.
Absolutely, and we had a gang called Los Chilangos. Los Chilangos is a slang term from anyone from Mexico City.
Okay.
And if you ever ask anyone from any other part of Mexico, he goes, what do you think about Chilangos? It's not, let's just say it's not, you don't get a very nice response.
Okay.
Even their soccer team from Mexico City are just notoriously not liked throughout. So anyway, this gang came into Los Angeles, and to show you how sophisticated they are, they would sell counterfeit bus passes.
Wow.
We would sell a legitimate bus pass for $50. They would sell a counterfeit for $25.
Wow.
So they would go into all the shops. We had multiple buildings where people worked in the sewing factories, making clothes and whatever. So to them, it was great to buy one of these counterfeit for half the price.
Sure, yeah.
And they were able to get the hologram down, everything.
Wow.
And we were losing a lot of money in revenue because people would just buy those passes. So what we did is establishing again contacts. We noticed that the bus pass had the same serial number, and I go, wow, because the drivers are calling, I got another counterfeit, and unfortunately, we'd have to cite the person for having a counterfeit document, and then we'd confiscate the pass, and then we noticed that the numbers were all the same. So I traced the numbers, and we found out it was sold at one store.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
It's been a real journey since 2014 when I first had my injury. I realized that my home was just not working for me and that it was time to ask for help. Homes for Our Troops is really giving me my life back. The shower allows me to go in and turn around with my chair, pull down storage racks, automated door systems, hours of my morning given back to me. Adaptive sports are a huge part of my life, a huge part of my healing journey as well. Homes for Our Troops helped with making sure that I had a home gym so that I can continue to train. This past year, I was able to host Thanksgiving in my home, and it was the first time I was able to have my whole family in one place, and I was able to contribute to the meal. There are a lot more veterans in need, and Homes for Our Troops is going to be there to help them too.
Homes for Our Troops builds and donates specially adapted custom homes nationwide for severely injured post-9/11 veterans and enables them to rebuild their lives. Join our mission at hfotusa.org.
If you're the owner and or operator of a local business and want to continue to hear the right talk, please consider advertising on KBLU. Your advertising dollars are the gasoline for the Clark, Kilmeade, Hannity, Beck engine. Without your support, the old 560 just won't roll. Reach out to like-minded folks, the Patriots listening to this legendary radio station. When you do, you can invite new customers in and remind regulars to visit more often. And most importantly, keep the programming you love on 560 KBLU.
Hey guys, Dave Ramsey here. Join me and the Ramsey personalities as we give you the tools and motivation you need to win in the areas of money, career, and more right here on The Ramsey Show.
The Dave Ramsey Show, weeknights at 7 on 560 KBLU.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Made, and it was distributed out of one store. So we decided that we'd set up a surveillance, cameras back in the day, and wait for a person to come in to
buy a good old-fashioned stakeout.
And through the contacts, we heard through a confidential informant that it was a former bus driver that was making these, that was fired for stealing fare, and he decided it'd be a good idea to make counterfeit.
Don't you think of it? But he's kind of like Robin Hood, don't you think?
Well,
he's helping the poor guy.
He is, but the thing is, you got to remember, He was also involved in other things. With the money was making, he was involved in other illegal activity. We figured this guy was making about $30,000 a month.
Wow.
Back in the 90s, that's pretty
fantastic,
money.
Yeah.
So we found out who Miguel was, and we got him on camera because he bought the camera, and he would take the original counterfeit bus pass, go to Tijuana, have it printed out there, and then brought it across the border. So yours truly, when we did a stakeout, followed him all the way across the border.
Huh?
And my sergeant, when we got to San Ysidro, my sergeant, I go, "Hey, Sarge, can I take a break in Mexico?" And just like what you see on the movies, we followed him all the way to the print shop. And back then I had a 35mm camera and took pictures, and I actually walked into the print shop, and lo and behold, all of our stacks for the next month, because you could buy it before the 25th of each month, you can buy a legitimate bus pass for the next year.
And so he was lining up the schedule.
He was lining it. He'd bring across the border, and they would question him, "What's all this for?" I work for the, we make them here. Make a long story short, crosses the border. We catch him. We get search warrants on his properties, and we find all kinds of illegal
contraband
activity. And just from that arrest.
Yeah.
But again, it goes by a good old-fashioned police work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what got me into more interested into a complex investigations. So that
from the legal standpoint, now we're in the criminal law area mm-hmm. of practice, and so when it goes to arrest Miguel, you probably had to go provide evidence to a judge to issue a warrant, and then you could go in his house, right?
What happens is that we have one of the things that with the Border Patrol at the time, we were able to be at the border because we knew what his vehicle was, his license plate, a picture of him. We let every one of the INS agents at the border.
The federal branch was involved.
They were involved. They gave us one of their radios, and they say, if this car comes by at any time, we'll call you. We got a hotel. Us plainclothes cops, we got a hotel. Now we're working with the government. But once he comes into California, I remember in California, when you're a peace officer, you have peace officer status
everywhere.
Mm-hmm. And yes, when you at the time we went and Detective Barr talked to the judge in Los Angeles, and he gave us the warrants for the Los Angeles area. He had a house in Bloomington, California, next to Fontana. And we got a warrant, for that house too. So at the same time, when we caught him, we were able to raid the houses and find other illegal stuff that he was doing. But thing is, we couldn't do anything in Mexico because he was printing everything in Mexico.
Right, yeah.
But
you don't have jurisdiction there.
No, we don't have jurisdiction, but we had a nice meeting with the district attorney from Mexico and let him know what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
They raided him.
Oh, they did?
At the print shop. So they did their own thing. Yeah. And that was just because based on our things. So that's how that works there. He got charged, and that's where it goes from there. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
So you did that for a while. Okay. So you're a police officer for how long? This is the early 90s. That's the Beverly Hills Cop days. You ever watch those movies?
Yes.
Axel Foley?
Yes, I watch them.
Dun,
yeah.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah. Of course. Because it's Hollywood. It's a lot of Hollywood.
Yeah, and you had that in your area.
And they never show when these – that's why cops – we don't watch cop shows because they don't show you doing the reports. When you're doing the reports, you're spending hours to and then filing the case. And these TV shows show a cop getting in a shooting, and next thing you know, he's 10-8. He's back in service the next day. That's not the way it works.
No.
They put you out, and they will take your weapon. They will give you a replacement weapon, and then you're placed in the we call it the rubber gun club. You are placed on desk duty until further because now you have to be investigated, make sure
really?
It's a good shooting. You know,
wow.
I got shot. I've been shot at three times in my career. I can remember them once in Lido Creek in San Bernardino Mountains. Bonfire, we go 97 on the scene, Marty Morris and I. You get there, and someone shoots at us with the 38.
Wow.
As we exit our patrol car.
Mm.
And you are ready to shoot back, but it was a group of teenagers, young adults that ran back into the woods. You take a shot, like they say, in the dark, and you hit the wrong person. You have to think about your background. Mm-hmm. With police officers, you got to check what is your background when you are in a shooting. Sure. Are you going to hit an innocent person? So this doesn't work like the, you know, you shoot 15 shots, but what if you hit the wrong person? You hit the person, you don't know who shot at you. Mm-hmm. So you got to think. Second time was during the riots. I worked the Rodney King riots in 92. I was at 55th and Van Ness in South Central when the riots broke out April 29th, 1992. I'll never forget that either because it was chaos. People forget it's the worst civil unrest in United States history. And we didn't have social media back then. And it was terrible what happened with Rodney King when he was pulled over and beaten and it was recorded and it caused a gigantic riot. We lost 55 people, you know, citywide. Buildings were burned. Mm-hmm. They were shooting at the firefighters. So we had to escort the firefighters to fires now. Mm. So it was a horrible time. And 39th and Figueroa, myself and Officer Correll, we were on patrol. And we would arrest everyone for curfew at 10. Mm-hmm. And we're in the area. We see two men drinking, 40s. We're making the U-turn to make contact with them to hook them up. One of them brandishes a 45, and luckily he shot like boys on the hood because he didn't aim at us, and those rounds went right over our heads. Correll wants to get out and chase him. We're in the projects. Says, and then you call for backup. There is no backup because the whole city was going. So you had to calm him. He was younger, and I says, you need to calm down. We go in there, you're going to ambush us.
Yeah.
We're going to lose.
Outgunned.
We're going to have to lose. And sometimes you got to do a tactical retreat. 6 weeks later, after they did the investigation, they recovered 45 rounds from back in the day. They had a TV repair shop. And sure enough, it went through the TV repair shop, and the detectives found the slugs.
Wow.
And they were 45s.
Wow.
I could have been killed that night.
Yeah.
And again, we couldn't return fire because they ran into the dark projects. We have no shooting background.
Yeah.
That's very frustrating.
Very frustrating.
And the third time was at Fontana PD during a traffic stop. Officer Trevino and I are dealing with gang members. We sit them at the curb. All of a sudden, we hear pop, pop, pop. We look up, and the tree branches were falling off. Well, someone shot at us from a distance. And then when we looked, the car took off on the freeway. Again, two of us, seven of them, what do? You leave them, go with – it was one of those things where they got away with it. And again, what am I going to do? Shoot at them when they get on the freeway and kill an innocent person. So that's three times I've been shot at.
Things are so racially charged these days, I feel like. You say something, you know, that can be taken out of context and you might be doxed or something. You worked – down in the hood, let's say, did you ever feel racially discriminated against? How does race, or does it even play into what you were doing as a police officer? Because you talked about black guys that shot at you one night. You know, is there a camaraderie between races, or is it more like, no, you're this race and I'm this race, and therefore we're enemies?
These three incidences where I shot at. At Lido Creek in San Bernardino Mountains, there were white skinhead types that shot at us. Okay, in Los Angeles, it was two African Americans. They were blood members from the blood gang. They were wearing red. Mm-hmm. And the third time was Mexican Americans shot at us. So there's nothing there. Okay, I got shot at by three different individuals during the riots. The Asians in Koreatown, they held their own. If you've ever heard the story, they're called the Rooftop Boys. If you ever Google that, they were on top of their businesses in Koreatown with rifles, protecting their businesses during the riots.
Wow!
And they were shooting at the rioters that were trying to come and burn their build.
Wow! Interesting. Koreatown.
Yeah. It's called the Rooftop Boys, and they protect it. So, again, when you're a police officer, you encounter people from all over. And everyone has their bad element, okay, no matter what. For example, a lot of people say these outlaw motorcycle gangs. In the outlaw motorcycle gang, for example, the Hells Angels, they started out in San Bernardino County. Is when they were World War II vets that came for World War II, special forces, rough guys, and they decided to start their own motorcycle gang. And people will say, well, they're rough and tough, but you know that I never, even though they were out there, never had a problem with them.
Really?
As long as you give them respect.
Yeah.
And that goes for everybody all the way. I've been very fortunate enough to do 33 years in law enforcement. What helped me a lot was being a psych tech, being a nurse. Because even though I worked as a law enforcement officer all these years, I still moonlighted as a nurse. On my days off, I would go work at the hospital, okay? So I was still part-time on call.
Uh-huh.
Do you know how much patience you have when you have to talk a person that has suicidal ideations, a person that you had to administer 100 milligrams of Visceral IM stat because they went totally physical on someone? You got to calm down. I use the same tactics in the field. Yours truly became also a hostage negotiator.
Wow.
So when we had the SWAT team called out, I was the one in the comm center, and we had a board, and then I would do an assessment of the person. It's called a SOAP note, subjective, objective assessment plan.
Nurses use those, right?
We use those, yes. Mm-hmm. You did the same thing. So I found, by talking to the family members, is he on psychotropic meds? Why is he mad? Is his wife stepped out on it? Whatever. So you take your notes, and you use that to talk to the person. And we would have to throw, before cell phones, the SWAT team would throw a tactical box into the house to talk to someone, a landline.
Oh, I see. Okay. So it had a phone in there.
There was a phone in there. And that you're on the other end talking.
No snacks.
Well, we can do snacks, you know, as a hostage negotiator. When they start asking for alcohol, of course, we can't provide that. But again,
why? That'd probably work.
Well, you don't want to have a person that's on psychotropic meds mixing it with alcohol. But
coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
In tough times, it can be difficult to know where to turn. If you or someone you know is looking for help, the Yuma Community Food Bank is here if you need a hand. We provide food and other resources to families, seniors, and individuals in need. We are open Monday through Friday. All you need to receive a food box is a photo ID with your current address. Visit our website at yumafoodbank.org for more information. The Yuma Community Food Bank also accepts donations in the form of non-perishable food, monetary donations, and volunteer help. You can choose to donate or advocate. You can choose to volunteer or raise awareness. You can choose to help end hunger. Call us anytime, 928-343-1243. Visit our main campus, located at 2404 East 24th Street, or use our food locator map online at yumafoodbank.org.
The best words to hear at the TSA security checkpoint? You're good to go. All it takes is a little preparation. Get to the airport early, bring a carry-on bag that fits in the overhead, and have an acceptable ID. Not all state-issued IDs will cut it. Check out tsa.gov/ID and see which TSA acceptable IDs make the grade, like a real ID or passport.
Before you jet, do a little prep, and you're good to go. Check out tsa.gov/ID or the MyTSA app.
I am Rosario Dawson. Cancer is one journey no one should take on alone. And Stand Up to Cancer wants to make sure no one has to. We bring together the best scientists and doctors to help accelerate the development of more effective treatments. And with the support of individuals like you, more patients will see that even though cancer may interrupt the journey, it doesn't have to determine the destination. Join us, and let's go further together. Learn more at standuptocancer.org/AA.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
But the bottom line is that my psych background and helped me a lot for verbal intervention, where you can talk to someone. You know, three things that I would use my tactics. I'm a person with a warrant. It's bigger than I am. he kind of wants a fight. I'm going to ask you to put your hands behind my back. I'm going to go to, if you don't comply, then I'm going to have to make you. And what do? You get on that radio, 3 Paul 24, send two more units. Mm-hmm. And he goes, I might not do it by myself, but I got two other units coming. So come on, let's mm-hmm. get this done. And it's just ways that you have to, you know. And are there officers out there that shouldn't be cops? Of course. There's a lot of officers that get the badge and they think because they have that badge they can do whatever they want. Mm-hmm. Usually it's somebody that was bullied in school. This is their way of getting back at society. And then you always find, how did that guy make it to be a cop? He used to be punked all the time. And then they get the badge, and unfortunately, those...
A little bit of authority.
And then you have some that are roid rage, you know, and that
causes... Ex-military or something.
Well, you know, a lot of it has to do with the personality. They get into the business for the wrong reasons. And they're 24-7, they think they're super cops. And sometimes they don't think, and they easily can get 0 to 60, get upset. Got to have patience.
Yeah.
That's why they yell at you at the academy. When you go to the academy, I went to two academies. And first day, they scream at you, yell at you, uh-huh. to see what your stress level's at.
Mm.
And that's what people were yelling at us during the riots, calling us every name. And you have to maintain your professionalism. Although if they put their hands on you, then you got to take care of business.
Sure.
But so anyway, all this, and I had time to join the reserves.
I was just going
to
ask, wait a second, but you were in the military as well. How did you do all that?
We had the Navy Reserves. I joined the Navy Reserves.
Why Navy?
I've always liked the Navy. I had an uncle. My uncle, Pete Carrillo, may he rest in peace. He was the family, let's say he was the...
kind of the hero.
The hero. He was
on a pedestal. Yeah, he served in the military.
Yeah, served in the military. Family being from Mazatlan and Mexico. And he just went in there. And I always looked up to Uncle Pete. You know, he was in the Navy and he served. And I followed in his footsteps. And I joined. Now, when I joined, I was never on a ship. I was with the Seabees, an MCB 17 out of Camp Pendleton.
Mm-hmm.
And we were attached to the 5th Marines. So we drilled on the weekends. And then my number came up in 06. At 43 years old, I was activated to Iraq.
Wow.
So from,
how was that conversation with your wife?
I'll never forget. I was on a cordless. They don't have these anymore, but the big old cordless phone. I'm sitting in my... above ground pool, and all of a sudden I get the call. You've been presidential recall. You've been activated.
Wow.
So you got to go back to the police department. At the time, I was with Fontana PD. And you just tell them, I got activated. And then you do the – they send you to Port Hueneme for training, a month training to get ready. And then they put you on a plane and ship you all the way over to Ireland. You stop in Ireland, and then you go from Ireland to Kuwait. Kuwait, you wait in Kuwait, and then you get on a C-130, and you're shipped into Habaniya, which is between Ramadi and Fallujah. And when you're on that C-130 with your fellow shipmates and Marines, you don't know where you know what's going to happen. You're getting off in a war zone, and I was attached to the 5th Marines, and then we landed. And it's just another world. And remember, with getting now into the military phase of things, we see that when you're in war, your phone calls are limited, your emails are monitored. You have to be careful because it's OPSEC. But most of all the holidays, there's two funerals. Uncle of mine passed away because you can't get on a plane and go back. Other than being an immediate family in an emergency, the Red Cross will do everything to fly you back. And we had that happen. One of my shipmates had to go back because his mom died. But for an uncle, so you miss all these holidays. I'll never forget Christmas, Thanksgiving, you know, being Christmas alone in your barracks, in your room, and you're just there without your family. And you have to realize that a lot of people, soldiers, service members had a lot of mental anxiety because they'd find out that their girlfriend, wife were stepping out on them, a lot of family problems, and they can't deal with them. And we did have service members, unfortunately, take their lives because there's a lot of stress there. And we did our job. And my job, as old as I was, I mean, can't imagine being 43 in a war zone. No, I wasn't at the front lines, and I don't have no war stories to say. I was in the rear with the gear, proudly supplying our troops. I did my job. We worked 7 days a week. We got Sundays half a day off because we had to keep stuff moving. But at the same time, we were on a lake. A lot of people don't know Iraq has three big lakes, and at any time the insurgents can come up. So I slept maybe 4 hours a night because you're always on guard. And as far as getting rocketed, you never knew where these rockets were going to hit. So yes, it was dangerous. And then I was exposed to the burn pits.
I don't know what that is.
The burn pits are the when you threw a bunch of hazardous material and you couldn't throw stuff in the dump like computers and documents, yeah, and
batteries and
that, all that stuff was thrown in the burn pits, and it was always burning, continuous burning, and it affected my airway, and and we had
you guys were doing that.
We're doing that. And our barracks were...
Order. The military said, just put it in.
Yeah, put it in there. And we had no idea how bad the burn pits were. And it caused, I now have asthma, and I have to, breathing issues because it was toxic. You just threw all kinds of stuff in there. And again, you're out there for approximately a year. And what didn't happen to our Vietnam vets that we got as OIF in Afghanistan and Desert Storm is that our fellow Vietnam veterans, when they came back from war, they received no mental treatment, clinical treatment. They were told to come back, and you know the stories. They were spat on. They uniforms they couldn't wear them in public because they were called baby killers. There was no transition for them coming back into civilian life. So that's why you had a lot of Vietnam veterans that had problems, not only mental but physical, because they were exposed to Agent Orange. They didn't have what we have now, taking care of our veterans. But one of the things that I really appreciate after being in a war zone is that when you come back, they brought us back to Port Hueneme. They just didn't release us back to our families. They brought us back and they gave us classes. They did assessments. They spoke to us. They says, look, you guys have been gone for this amount of time. Your wife, your significant other, they had to be the person running the household. So whatever decisions they made, bad, good, or indifferent, they had to make one. You're no longer the playmaker there.
Interesting.
Because what happens is they had to make decisions, mortgages, make ends meet, whatever was the call, they had to make the call. And you got to learn to accept it. And that's one thing there was a transition back into civilian life. Because now you're with your spouse, or your significant other, your family, because you've been isolated so long, you have to ease in back into civilian life. When I came back, I was driving like I drove out there. My wife's going, well, you're driving aggressively. Yeah, I just got to make sure we don't have a vid bomb come at us or a car come. And she had to tell me, hey, calm down, uh-huh. You're back and everything's good. No one's going to.
So PTSD, you know,
yes.
This is what we'd call
yes.
that now.
Yes, and you're sitting there because you're having.
You don't even know it.
You don't even know it. And it's twice because we're hypervigilant. If I go, for example, to any establishment here at Burgers and Beer, I'm always looking around.
With your back to the wall.
And cops, and we sit in the back.
Yeah.
So we can observe. It's just part of our assessing. We're hypervigilant. Here in Yuma, we have these explosions in the middle of the night, and we get up. Just a few weeks ago, my buddy, who's an Army veteran, my neighbor, we heard a sonic boom. We've had these happen out here in Yuma.
Yeah, the testing.
And both of us, at the same time, exited our houses, and we're both looking, hey, did you hear that? Yeah, I heard that. And we're looking around. We have our mag lights, and we're thinking maybe a propane tank exploded. Come to find out, it was a sonic boom.
Mm-hmm.
But it's amazing how both of us exited our house at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And, but anyway, that's been my career, you know, as far as, you know, I served and did my job. And then I did, I went to Afghanistan.
Wow.
And served with the State Department. They needed to train their Afghan National Police. Mm. So they sent us to a special school. And it was in Virginia. And it was called PAST. And it was a special training course in the middle of the woods out there. And the way that they would weed you out of this training is every morning when you lined up for a formation, all they did is did what's called the shoulder tap. So the instructor would come behind you, tap you on the shoulder, get on the bus, you're out of here. You didn't make it. Because we had tactical shooting, psychological, everything that you could imagine, specialized training. And we were shipped over to Dubai, and then Dubai into Kabul. And I did three tours.
Wow.
I was all over Afghanistan, Kabul, Gardez, Kandahar, and then found Kandahar, Zabul province in Kalat City, and then I ended up in Kunduz by the Tajikistan border. Interesting fact about Afghanistan, we saw a lot of Russian tanks and armored personnel carriers. We're talking just like the Walmart parking lot up here. It was three times as more vehicles that the Russians left back with the Red Star. Because as you know, they were there in Afghanistan for in the 1980s. Mm-hmm. And they lost the war.
Sure.
They lost the war. And I'll never forget an Afghan colonel telling me, see all these vehicles that are right here from the Russians? Because it was cheaper for them to leave it than take it back to Russia. This is what's going to happen to you guys. Because this is the graveyard of empires. Mm-hmm. From Genghis Khan to the British, to the Soviets.
Itself.
Yes, to the Soviet Union, to the Americans.
You think there's truth to that?
Yes, of course there is. Because at the time in 09 when I was there, I was thinking, oh, come on, we're not going to leave our Humvees and our equipment. We're never going to leave Bagram. I mean, Kandahar Airfield, CAF, we had what's called the Boardwalk. Boardwalk was a shopping area that they built on the base. We had Burger King, Subway. We had a TGIF that the government, your taxpayers' money, paid for these establishments to make it feel like home.
Yeah.
We were with the Canadians, and they had a Tommy Hortons or some coffee place that they really liked. Like our Dunkin' Donuts, the Canadians, they brought them their coffee shop out there. And we would go there. We'd go on after our day. We can go there and get a cup of coffee, get food that we were familiar with.
Yeah.
And we had a level one trauma hospital on this base.
Wow.
We're talking a 2-mile base, you know. And we had all that stuff going on. And Bagram was a gigantic base. And you never think, oh, we're going to turn all this over in the future after 20 years. But again, the thing with the Taliban is that they were fighting using the tactics that you never know who they were.
Yeah, it's guerrilla warfare.
And yes. And I showed you a few pictures.
Yeah.
I sent you a few pictures how I worked on those Taliban that we captured were the making of the bombs. So I did a lot of special work out there. But it all came back to you never knew who the enemy was because they wore the man jams, the same clothes, and maybe they were nice villagers during the day, but at night they would attack us. So it was a very difficult war.
Kids.
A lot of friendly fire.
Yeah.
A lot of friendly fire. We had two Afghans that were our translators, Fahim and Sierra, and they were housed with us in our living quarters.
In Farsi?
They spoke Farsi and they spoke Dari. And those are the two languages. It was Dari, and Farsi was like a catch-all because it was Arabic.
Yeah.
So if you got a guy from Syria, from Iran, and they could still, but they still have different accents.
I see.
Yeah. So they would translate to, and then you had the Shiites, you had the Sunnis, you had their own internal fighting amongst themselves. So
complicated. It's so just, complex.
You know, just learned a few phrases. Afghanistan, Randustaram, Tashakur, Manana, Shukran. So we just learned a few things. How are you? and greetings.
Yeah. Well, David, we'll have to have you back on.
Thank you very much.
I know you're a busy guy, but maybe after promotion. That's next week, right?
Yes, yes.
We got to get that place spick and span.
We will do the best we can. And like I said, we just, we're still on cloud nine with our 5-year anniversary living in Yuma.
Uh-huh.
And guess what? After driving that 4Runner that Josh gave me at Yuma or upgraded us to, I bought my wife a 4Runner from, of all places, here. Toyota.
Is that right?
Toyota dealership. They've changed names, but we went there and we picked the same one.
Oh, did you?
And for.
I like it.
We love it. We bought it in 2020. We asked them to put a big robe, like they see on the commercials, a red bow on it. Derek was our salesman there in Toyota.
Yeah, we deal with we do Toyota as well. It's awesome.
It's awesome.
I do it all through email. They'll have it all ready for me.
Yes.
Spends maybe 20 minutes signing paperwork. I've had the opposite experience in California. We bought a van there once, and it took me hours to get out of there.
Yeah.
And the sticker price, you know, by the time we left, it was like, that was not what was advertised, you know. Yeah. So Toyota here, I've just had such good dealings with them.
Yes,
so.
they're good people, and you know, their service is great, and it's all that was a sign, you know, hey, you'll like this vehicle, and my wife is very happy with it. So
good.
We've just,
if mama really ain't happy, ain't nobody happy.
That's right. So, but thank you very much for having me on the show, and
we'll have to aquí
estamos a la orden siempre. Es un orgullo de estar en la mesa directiva, y también es un orgullo de vivir aquí en Yuma, una ciudad hermosa, con mucho calor, pero en el corazón también. Gracias.
Bueno.
Gracias.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner & Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit yumaestateplanning.com.
Outings around the water are supposed to be fun. Help keep them that way by remembering the 5 layers of protection from drowning. Install fences and alarms around pools. Supervise swimmers vigilantly. Make sure everyone in the pool knows basic water skills. Use life jackets around open water. And always prepare for the possibility of emergencies with rescue skills such as CPR. Together, these 5 layers can keep the good times good, because anyone can drown, no one should. This message brought to you by the Greater Yuma Water Safety Alliance.
Statistics show that roughly 20 veterans die by suicide every day in the United States. And each day, over 1,000 dogs are euthanized in shelters across the country. Canines for Warriors is the leading nonprofit organization providing highly trained service dogs to veterans with PTSD and other invisible wounds of war.
I'd probably still be stuck in the living room with the curtains drawn, with my back to the wall, with probably a gun on my lap.
The majority of service dogs from Canines are rescues, and with each pairing, 2 lives are changed forever. We rescue the dog rescues the warrior. To learn more about how Canines for Warriors is saving lives at both ends of the leash, please visit caninesforwarriors.org. That's caninesforwarriors.org.
You know your business needs to get in the digital game, marketing on the internet, and maybe finally fixing your website. Don't let the world pass you by. Go to YumaAdvertising.com. That's YumaAdvertising.com. They're part of the Desert Southwest's largest media company, and their team has executed thousands of digital marketing campaigns across the country. Digital campaigns for businesses just like yours. Who knew they needed to get in the game? YumaAdvertising.com. That's YumaAdvertising.com. Don't let the world pass you by.
Hey, it's Ryan Blaney, driver number 12, Discount Tire Ford Mustang. In the NASCAR Cup Series, pit stops to check my tires can make all the difference in getting a win. Off the track, regularly check your tires can be the difference in avoiding an accident or making it safely through the long road trip. Stop by a local tire retailer for a tire safety check on your vehicle, or check on your tires, tread at home, use the penny test.
A message from the U.S. Tire Manufacturers Association.
The preceding show on 560 KBLU was a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, El Dorado Broadcasters LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU El Dorado Broadcasters LLC nor its affiliates nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
This is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.